You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Eric Bann. Eric, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Eric, let's talk about what you're working on right now. What are you, what's happening in your studio at the moment? And you're in Las Vegas now, is that correct?
Correct, I'm in Las Vegas. Well, there's a few things going on. I have my studio practice, and I also own a print publishing house that we run out of my studio called Test Site Projects. So once the pandemic and the quarantine sort of happened out here, it kind of things slowed down a bit, allowed me to kind of catch up on printing projects for the print shop. It also gave me a slight break, I guess, from the studio. I felt like a time to reflect more than to make. So recently we're printing projects for an artist exhibition we have coming up. The artist's name is Justin Favela. And we made three print projects with him. And in the studio, at the same time, I've been sort of working on paintings, but new paintings that I think are a little more personal than the paintings I've been working on previous to this, partially probably in response to the quarantine and time spent sort of reflecting.
So tell me about that work. What kind of work is that? The last work I saw of yours on the and your website was from 2019, and you were using paint and ink on photo paper.
Yeah. I do a lot of experiments on photo paper. I kind of like the plasticity of it. It has sort of a machine-made quality that that the paint and ink sort of sit nicely on. I've been pulling paintings, recent paintings, including the ones on my website, were using stock photography. I was trained as a photographer, and I always took photos where I was referencing, but probably 5 years ago, I started pulling from found photographs. I grew up in a hotel in Las Vegas, and in the hotel growing up, it was sort of surrounded by reproductions and posters. And in a lot of ways, I've been responding to that. The paintings, as of recent, became more personal because I think the found imagery I've been pulling from is different. So the painting that's sitting in front of me is of a paper tiger, and it sort of references, I've spent a lot of time with my nephew in the last 6 months, who's seven, and sort of thinking about fragility and temptation and sort of topics that I don't think are specifically personal to me, but they stemmed from more personal moments.
And the paper tiger, what is that? I associate a few things with that.
Well, in this painting, it's of a cutout, the paint of a notebook page in the shape of a tiger, and the tiger's tail is broken, and the tiger is sort of facing a rain cloud, and it's done in a very crude way, I'd say, to where it there's a lot of texture. It's very painterly, and it's sort of very childlike, which is much different than the photographs and paintings I'd been making before this. But I think I felt fragile during this whole quarantine, as I imagine many people did, and it sort of took me to my childhood in some way.
And that's on, is that also on photo paper, or what are you working on?
This is on photo paper. It's acrylic and polymer and graphite on photo paper. And the photo behind it, the photo paper, I just printed a solid yellow rectangle to sort of give a ground. I work a lot with solvents on the photo paper, printing solid colors and then using the solvents to erase and sort of refine an image productively.
So what do the solvents do? I mean, and that sounds like, of course, a relationship to printmaking, which we'll talk about soon, but the solvents sound like, yeah, a very odd element in that mix, and especially on photo paper. I would think that would have pretty, I mean, I guess you know, but pretty unpredictable reactions in some ways.
You know, I think in some degree there's an amount of serendipity to the process, but after erasing so many, I think you get a little bit of control over what the expectations are, at least. And in this case, the solvents dissolve the ink on the paper. So similar to lithography, like stone lithography, they would do like a touche wash, and it would reticulate into small sort of dots to give a tone. The solvents I use on the photo paper do a very similar effect.
And so what will, you know, this sounds like a very, like a new series of work, or it's a different type of work. What will happen with this work that you're making now, these paintings?
Well, I have this sort of project I'm working through right now. I think of as an exhibition. Like the paintings respond to each other in a way that I could see them together. And next year I've got, this year everything is, so many things have been postponed as everybody's going through. And so next year these things will come back in some way. And I think still working out the details, because it's a two-person exhibition, but myself and another artist, Nazaferian Lofti, have an exhibition together at the Suburban Gallery in Milwaukee. I think that's going to be June. So,
the
hoping
Suburban,
to resolve that's, some of this.
That's Michelle Grabner's gallery, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, that's exciting. So tell me about your printmaking and the press. When did that start? I'd love to go back and talk a little bit about printmaking. When did you first get involved? That was in college?
Well, you know, so my father, my grandfathers on both sides, many of my cousins, my uncles, and my brother all are were commercial lithographers. So I grew up around printmaking, but I never really paid any attention to it until I went to start my undergrad. When I graduated undergraduate, I got a job offer at Gemini Gel in Los Angeles, which is a fine art publishing house. And so I moved out there.
Legendary one that's done Jasper Johns and all kinds of amazing artists over the last 20, 30 years, right?
Yeah, like 50 years, and it's an amazing place. I mean, it was very influential to me. I in referencing the printmaking in my own process, I don't really make many prints for my own work, but I totally think about the problem solving that goes into it, and that was a skill I picked up at Gemini. So that that experience sort of always kept me interested in collaboration. In terms of helping to facilitate other artists' work that I believe in, and also collecting. So when I was in Chicago for my graduate program, I was approached by the Nevada Museum of Art to produce a portfolio of Nevada artists. And having grown up here, they wanted to include me in the portfolio, but they didn't know where to produce the portfolio, so we published it out of my studio. And after that, there were
a
group
of
artists.
Exactly? Let's talk about that process of creating that portfolio, because that sounds like your first publishing project, really. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was the first sort of independent publishing project.
So how did you do that? What was the process that was used?
They were all photo lithography. So I worked with them. It was 10 artists, and then myself. So there were 11 artists, but two of them collaborated. And we worked through the mail, mailing drawings and film and images back and forth until I poofed it to their liking. And then at that point, we produced the portfolio, and the museum paid us to do that, and then they received the portfolios and sold them as a benefit for the new museum they're building down in Las Vegas.
And so that began an adventure in filmmaking for you.
Yeah, that began the sort of the idea of opening our own shop. So in 2018, we moved back to Las Vegas, my wife and I, and we established test site projects. And so far, we've been able to probably do about 6 or 7 projects. We started by doing a portfolio of local artists for the book festival. And then we expanded. We invited Amanda Browder from New York, Tony Lewis from Chicago, Ayanna Moore and Rodrigo Lara, who are also in Chicago, Justin Favela, who is a Las Vegas-based artist. And then we probably have about 4 or 5 projects in the works right now that will take us through the end of the year.
And so tell me more about this process. Are these all, this is all photo lithography?
It's a mix. We're set up to do pretty much anything from photo-based processes to stone lithography. So currently we've got a few etching projects going on. Amanda Browder's was a 19-color screen print that was printed onto muslin that was mounted to an adhesive and cut into 51 shapes and then remounted
wow.
to paper.
Okay, so that's really impressive. So let's talk about that a little bit. Your family, you're very much involved in printmaking, but you're doing it more through the angle of the way Gemini Gel operates. Is that correct? Like it sounds like you'll do almost any process that the artist wants to do, or do you set it up differently? What you just mentioned, the Browder project, sounds extremely unusual and something that I would imagine the artist came to you with. But that sounds like a very ambitious and difficult printmaking project.
Yeah, it totally relates and is based on my experience at Gemini. And the thing that I appreciated about Gemini, as opposed to other shops I've worked in around the country over the years, is just how willing they are to go down that road with the artist to sort of explore what the possibilities are and expand the conversations that happen around printmaking. And I think that's really important. It's one of the things that Rauschenberg brought into the print shop every time, which I always enjoyed. And I think in this case, one of the things that I really enjoy about it personally is I love working with the artists to help sort of bring their vision to fruition, I'd say. And so in this case, and it's also important to me that the work relates to the artist's studio practice, that when they leave with something to take home with them, that it's not separate from their studio practice. So in this case, Amanda Browder, for her work, wraps buildings in fabric. So to make the print out of fabric seemed important, and to figure out how to facilitate that was the problem solving, which is the part that I think I really enjoy about it.
I love that, and I think that's the way great printmaking shops operate, to kind of stretch the boundaries of the medium itself, right? Which, yeah, when you talk about Rauschenberg and Gemini, that's what was happening there. So in Gemini, because I never understood completely the model of Gemini, but they were collaborating with artists, but are you commissioning artists in the sense you reach out to artists, you collaborate with them, and then you sell the print yourself, or they become part of a portfolio? How does that work for you in terms of getting the work out into the world and selling the prints?
Totally. So what we do is we will do contract jobs if there's a museum that wants to make a print with an artist we work with. The museum can pay us to make that edition, and then we will hand the edition off to the museum. They can do as they please. But in most cases, with all the artists I mentioned, we invite them to come out here. Some of them, we were able to get other opportunities out here, so it made it easier for them and us to get them here. But often we just pay to fly them out. We pay for them to be here, and then we try to pay for the entire project as much as we can. I mean, there could be limitations on the project, but in most cases we're able to pay for what the artist wants, and the artist comes and we work through the process of what it is here. We don't really make copies, so the one thing that I picked up from Gemini that I sort of follow strictly is that it's not based on something else. So I wouldn't have an artist come in with a painting and us make prints of that painting, although the artist can come in and make a unique version of that painting, and that only exists in that iteration as a print. But I wouldn't want something that has an original that this is reproducing,
right,
if that makes sense.
And that, of course, that does make sense, you know. And when the artist does that work with you, which really sounds something close to a residency almost, it sounds almost close to the model of the Suburban, where you're going to potentially show the work that you mentioned, the sale of the prints is what ends up funding all of that? Is that what happens?
Yeah, so we generally, we put up the money to pay for the project, and when the project is complete, of course, the artist gets their sets of artists' proofs that we agree upon, and the shop gets a set of proofs that we agree upon, and then we have a profit split that happens. We've got art dealers and people that we work with to help get the prints out, or if the artist has a gallery, we'll work with their galleries. Then we also have private tours, local collectors, and an online presence that we're trying to build.
That's very exciting and a really, really cool model. And you know, so great to hear that's flourishing. It is, because you're an artist and a printmaker and a painter. It's really closer to, and forgive the comparison if it doesn't quite apply, but it is somewhat close to the project of the Suburban, because I've interviewed mm-hmm. Michelle Grabner, and we talked about the Suburban and the Poor Farm and how mm-hmm. she curates shows there. It's artist driven, obviously. It's artist curated, and it tends to be built around what the artist wants, around a conversation. And it sounds mm-hmm. like the process you use is similar, because what Michelle does, unless I'm wrong, is almost creates a type of residency, right? You go there, you stay there, you create work, or you hang work with her and her husband. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Is their relationship, is it similar, do you think?
I think there's definitely a similarity between the two. I think one of the things I always admired about Michelle is how supportive and sort of welcoming she is, and in helping to facilitate other artists' visions. And I think that's it, oftentimes fairly unique.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I mean, talking about like the Suburban and Gemini and what you're doing, I don't know exactly who was in charge of the shop at Gemini, but it was other printmakers, and were they also artists?
Everybody at Gemini was, for the most part, was an artist, although Gemini can be sort of all-encompassing, and oftentimes people put Gemini's projects in front of their own, and sometimes that sort of limited how much time they got in their own studio. It was easy to do because the projects were exciting. But everybody there was an artist and definitely had had an approach that was different than I'd say what I saw at other shops, where the printers and the collaborators' voices were not as important or not as sort of accepted.
And that's what sounds exciting, right, where the printers' and collaborators' voices are accepted, as you're saying, right, are utilized. It's not like an atelier or someplace, as you were saying, that's either making copies or just facilitating a beautiful print process. Like I remember I went to school at SUNY Purchase, and there were people doing calligraphs and all these amazing processes, and sometimes teachers or other faculty would come by with, you know, their, I don't know, large format negatives or something and have work made in these beautiful editions, but that wasn't so much a collaboration as just hiring a printer to make these kind of luxurious prints of, you know, I mean, it was all very interesting and beautiful, but it wasn't a collaboration. There's something very different about that, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one of the things that is different here too is, you know, we don't invite artists that are printmakers. Not that we wouldn't invite an artist who has a history in printmaking, but in most cases we're inviting artists that they may not even know where to begin. But that's part of why we're here, to help sort of explain and introduce them to ways of working. So it's exciting because I think it's like you see this moment where things start to make sense, and then the wheels like just take off.
I love that. That's fascinating. So as we come out of this pandemic, hopefully, because we're talking on June 23rd, which is kind of right in the middle of it all, still it seems. Yeah. What's next for the press? Is there a project underway now? Is it a Browder project, or is there something happening specifically now, or that will happen soon?
Well, we have a few projects with some LA artists that we're working on right now. It may take till later in the year until they really sort of wrap up. We've got an artist from Chicago, Alex Chitty. He's going to come out here, I believe, in August. But, you know, one of the things that we realized at the shop, we opened the shop also considering community, like how we could program things to either help fill in gaps in art education that happen in Vegas, whether it's facilitating workshops, collection tours, these exhibitions, having people in to sort of see the art in production, or even just introducing people to what it could mean to collect or support artists that they appreciate. And so we've really been thinking about how our resources could go into helping with some of the things going on. And out here, there's a lot of people out of work. So for the last 2 months up until June 30th, we have 20% of everything goes to a food bank out here to help pay for meals for people in need. But we're working on a couple benefits to raise money for sort of social justice programs. So between projects, we're sort of trying to figure out ways to use the space to activate the community or support the community as best we can.
That's good to hear, yeah, because I think, you know, it's a wonderful way to engage the community, but also printmaking is often misunderstood, isn't it? I mean, do you see it that way? I know that the general public, I have a history in printmaking and been an artist and I interview people who do a variety of kinds of things, so I know something about it. Most of the listeners do, I imagine, but the general public often is a misconception about printmaking. Do you find that too? Like, I would think there's a whole educational, model there, because it's hard to understand that prints are originals or limited editions if you don't really understand the process. You think it's a copy of an original, as you were saying at the beginning, which of course you don't do, but is misunderstood in the kind of non-art community, or maybe even in the educational community.
Oh, absolutely. Even in the art community, I've had painters we worked with who were drawers that it took a while before they sort of warmed up to the idea, simply because their interpretation of it was sort of built around that stigma of a copy, or what a multiple. I think the word multiple is helped sort of reshape the understanding around it a little bit, because I think those same conversations spill over into a lot of different objects that people live with, even if they're not art objects. So, but I feel like there's definitely a stigma, and I feel like there's artists who have helped to break some of that. Rauschenberg, referencing him again, but he seemed very important in that sort of conversation. But definitely, to the general public and to some degree, even within the art world.
Mm, that's true. So I want to thank you for talking to me about this, and I want to ask you one more question. What are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious.
Well, I'm just finishing up. I've been sort of studying John Cage's Composition in Retrospect, which is more a mix of sort of visual compositions and text, but just sort of thinking about his words a little bit. And I'm about to start this Bill Viola, his writings from 73 through 94. It's called Reasons for Knocking at an Empty House.
And both sound very interesting. Eric, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and your work.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.